Hi all, this is Amira Adawi. I'm your host of the Beauty Wellness Talk podcast. As you all know, this podcast focuses on raising awareness on the issues of colorism, skin lighting practices, and chemical exposures, as well as improving the health outcomes of communities of color. We discuss about topics that address and combat skin lighting practices, chemical exposures, as well as colorism. And so this is a bilingual podcast, and we invite experts to discuss about some of these issues and ways that we can find solutions to these issues that are impacting many communities. Today, our guest is Sonia Lunder, who is a senior toxic advisor at Xeric Lab. Sonia focuses on addressing issues, the intersectionality issues of gender equity and environmental issues. And we will discuss about how cosmetics are highly polluting our environment and how these toxics that are in some of these cosmetics are creating so much toxic exposure for many communities. Hi, Sonia. Welcome to Beauty and Wellness Talk today. It's so great to have you. And welcome. Can you introduce yourself, talk about what you do at Xeric Lab and what you're working on right now?
Yeah, hi Amira. Thank you so much for having me today. My name is Sonia Lunder. I am the Senior Toxics Policy Advisor at the Sierra Club. I work nationally on our organization's campaigns related to toxic chemicals and their impact on health, as well as gender equity and the impact of chemical pollution or chemicals in consumer products on women and children.
Thank you, Sonia. And for our listeners, just so you know, Sonia did an amazing work with us during the Amazon campaign. So she's a really great advocate and great public health scientist. So welcome, Sonia. So Sonia, the discussion today will, will focus on like cosmetics and toxic ingredients. And so could you tell me more about, I know you have done extensive work over the years in your public health career to address some of these toxic ingredients in cosmetic products, personal care, whether it's also makeup and other cosmetics. So what do you know about these cosmetics and the toxic ingredients that are in these cosmetics?
Yeah, like so many other products in the environment or in our food supply, we know that there isn't enough oversight and regulation over the way that body care products are made. And this includes lotions and shampoos and hair dyes and hair straightening products. There's so many questions about the ingredients that are put into them and their effects on people and their bodies. And there's not a lot of power, at least in the United States and in many other countries, for the government to actually study those ingredients or recall products if they're found to be causing damage or harm to people's bodies. So we've been working for a long time to educate the public about the gaps in our knowledge about cosmetic ingredients, to educate people about ingredients that are shown to be harmful or damaging to the body, and also make sure that government protections are stronger so that we can get the most harmful and dangerous products off the market.
Thank you, Sonia. So, Sonia, what are some of these ingredients that are in cosmetics? And I'm not referring to skin lighting products because we know that, but I'm referring more to the personal care products, but also the makeups, the lipsticks that people use that are not chemical free.
Yeah, we've worked together on skin lightening because the ingredients are so harmful and damaging to people. And at the same time, there are broader concerns about the ingredients that are put into body care products. whether they can cause, you know, minor irritation, or they could cause a person to develop an allergy in their skin or their respiratory system due to daily exposure. We also see that some preservatives and colors and fragrances can impact the body's reproductive system and make it damage a pregnancy, make it harder to get pregnant, or otherwise lead to problems with reproduction and fertility. These are subtle and they're hard to study because people use such a wide variety of products every day in their daily life, and they have many ingredients in them. But there are studies happening through epidemiology where we measure people and whether they're using something like a dark hair dye for decades. We also know this information from looking at the impacts to people who work in salons, in nail salons, straightening hair, where their exposures are much more intense than people in the general population. And then also just from learning from, laboratory studies of individual ingredients. But when it comes to body care products, one thing that's challenging is the complex variety of products that people are using and the way that those products change through time. And sometimes it takes a while before an allergy or, heaven forbid, a cancer or reproductive problem develops. So it can be very hard to track back in time and understand what types of exposures might have contributed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sonia. And you're absolutely right. Salons have multiple exposures. In the salons that we have been working with in Minnesota, not only the hair dye and the toxics in hair products, but also they do apply skin lighting products for individuals when they come to the salons, and they also sell skin lighting products. And so it's like multiple exposures that's happening in some of these salons. So thanks for highlighting that. So in terms of obviously, cosmetics are so under-regulated in the United States and globally. And so, and you have been doing some work around that, state federal legislations to change some of these regulatory processes and some of the states. So could you talk about what was done in cosmetics and ingredients regulations, and what are the problems, what are the barriers, why there is no universal policy in the United States to address some of these toxic ingredients in the cosmetics?
Yeah, in the US, the cosmetic safety rules were set more than 50 years ago and only written in a couple of pages. And basically, the FDA doesn't have a lot of power to regulate ingredients. There's only a handful of ingredients that have ever been found to be illegal or not allowed in cosmetic products. And instead, they rely on the cosmetics industry to run a panel that reviews ingredient safety. And they've only also found a handful of ingredients to be unsafe or not allowed to be used in cosmetics. And then mercury, of course, is an important example of even when one of the few ingredients that the FDA has said shouldn't be used in body care products, we still find, of course, for sale and in use. And it's one of the most harmful ingredients that we know of that's put into products we put on our skin and use on our bodies. So there's a failure to both study ingredients. FDA has very limited power to recall a product if it's causing damage or harm. And for some of the products that have popped up recently and caused alarm, for example, a shampoo called Wen that's sold by celebrities, dozens of women have reported that they have alopecia or their hair falls out after they use this product. And when you look at the listed ingredients, none of those ingredients necessarily stand out as being very unusual. They're all common. So still a real gap when we have lots of reports from people that a product is damaging their body, really a lack of understanding of why that might be and how we can prevent it from happening in the future. So the changes that we'd like to make would be, of course, much more oversight and guidance by the government. And then also once an ingredient's illegal, a lot more work to keep it out of commerce, to catch those products as they're being imported, and to educate communities that and salon workers who might be most intensely exposed to them. And those requirements are going to be what we need in order to make systematic change. It's so much work to go person by person and to try to educate people about what to be looking for. And as I mentioned, you know, you don't always learn from reading the ingredient list if a product is mislabeled or if there is something that we don't know about this combination of ingredients that may result in something serious like alopecia, the loss of all of your hair. So we have this huge gap between what we see happening, what people are experiencing, record rates of skin allergy, respiratory allergy, skin sensitization, and really understanding which particular products or practices are the cause of these serious health outcomes.
Mm-hmm. And why is that an issue to find which product? Because obviously we know that you know, some of these underlying issues are coming from these, you know, chemicals. Why is that there is no direct link? Is it because of, you know, like it's so under-researched and or some of these researchers need resources to do a long time?
There's some complexity there, both about how people's bodies respond differently. There's a lot we don't know about the allergic reactions and sensitization reactions, why some people can work in a salon environment and be fine, whereas other people develop allergies and quite serious ones that make it impossible for them to work. There's also information like a lot of natural fragrances and botanical oils can be sensitizing, meaning that they can cause your body to develop an allergic response. And so maybe the word lavender is written on the label, but what your body is reacting to is a component or a part of that lavender oil that's actually common in lots of different botanical allergies. Allergies in some way are easier because they develop quickly and people have this immediate reaction. You know, you know, if you use a particular soap or shampoo that you'll have an allergic reaction and that when you eliminate it, it gets better. But it can be very hard then also for people to know how to find and purchase products going forward that won't cause those reactions. And then once you've developed an allergy, you're more likely to develop allergies to other things. So there are these things that need to be changed or examined at the broad, you know, country or international level in order to prevent that first sensitization or reaction from developing in a person. And because it's very hard for the individual person to manage and avoid more contact with something as common as a botanical oil or an artificial preservative that may be also put into dishwashing liquid or into other types of cleaners. So that once you've been sensitized by using something in your skin or a baby wipe, that you're over the lifetime having to navigate and read labels and try to figure out how to avoid that in multiple types of products for the rest of your life, basically. So these are places where we can invest in prevention and more careful study and design of products that prevent a lifetime of complicated and frustrating choices from each individual who's impacted.
Yeah. And, you know, this reminds me like the lack of health literacy around, you know, some of the communities that we serve, because, you know, people are coming to them and marketing to them these different oils and different personal care products. And there's not so much knowledge about, you know, like ways they can either, you know, like read the label or even know what are, you know, some of these chemicals that trigger some sort of allergy. So there's a huge lack of literacy around this. I think very few people have the privilege to understand or even to read. And, you know, the awarenesses are not there. And that is, you know, the part that it's really sad where, you know, the government is not doing so much about not only the regulatory process, but also educating communities. Could you say something about that if you have any response to that?
Yeah, I'm torn. I mean, education is such a fundamental right and a fundamental need. At the same time, you know, I think my ideal world would be that you can walk in and buy a product in a store or be given something from a friend. And we've eliminated that need for vigilance because you can buy and use skin lotions and hair oils and, you know, sunscreen, just knowing that they work and knowing that the designers have done everything they can to minimize the risk that you're having, that your body will have a bad reaction to it or be damaged by it. So I always think, you know, I have a limited amount of time. I'd rather spend it gardening or maybe making a nice dinner rather than learning about ingredient safety for cosmetics or trying to figure out why my kid has a rash.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, yeah, there's so many other, you know, problems that people have, but also some of these health problems that many communities of color that, you know, they're experiencing disproportionately is coming from these environmental exposures. So my follow-up question is that, you know, what is the difference between conventional versus organic cosmetics and products? And nowadays, you know, you have seen Sonia, there's so many advertisement and marketing going around everywhere that saying that, you know, this is not toxic, this is organic, this is natural. What does that even mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's another, you know, I think exciting aspect of cosmetic safety and body care products is that we see a lot more attention to making natural products. We see a lot more products for people who want to wear their hair natural or use fewer ingredients on their body. And in general, that's a move away from synthetic fragrances, synthetic colors, synthetic preservatives, which do have safety concerns. And there, you know, there are a lot of ways that just basic oils or basic soaps can be less harmful to the body. The challenge is that there's no real regulation to figure out if organic products are different or if they're better. Many, you could buy an organic oil or something that wasn't grown with pesticides, which is what we usually think of what organic means when it comes to the food supply. But unless a product's certified, we're not always sure what that label means. Mm-hmm. And for some people who have very sensitive skin, even a natural fragrance, like I mentioned, lavender, rose, citrus, can provoke an allergic reaction. So, you know, there are many things in nature which our bodies don't react well to. And so if you're a person who's experienced problems with different skin problems or respiratory problems related to the products that you're buying and using, it won't be a perfect screening to help someone avoid those things that their body's reacting to. And I would just call people's attention to some of those fragrances, like I mentioned, citrus, lavender, rose type fragrances can be a place where the body reacts. And you would see like mostly a skin reaction. And maybe choosing unscented or, you know, things that don't have a smell to them might be a way to try to get away from those reactions if that's something you're having. I think in general, I'm very excited to see more growth in the natural products market and more options to people and more people thinking about it. But you do need to use this kind of, remember that it's not fully overseen. It could mean something very different from one company to another, and it may not be the only thing you need to look for when you're trying to find a product that's safest and healthiest for you and your family.
Yeah, and you know, it's becoming a global marketing. You know, it's not only in the United States where heavily businesses are advertising organic cosmetics and personal care products, but also, in the last couple of months, I've been traveling in Africa and especially in East Africa, and I've seen a lot of people advertising organic, and some people even saying, oh, I made this in my home. So I don't even know what that means, actually. And it's just very scary that there's no regulatory that's in place to even look into some of these organics. And how do even people know that these are natural and organics, those who are even formulating?
Yeah, it's challenging. I really do love buying things from small businesses, buying things from friends. I think some things like soaps and oil, body oils, are very simple and don't need to be made, you know, in a factory to be working. They may not last as long. They may not be, you know, developed to sit on your shelf for months and months. And You know, I think sunscreen would be an example of one thing that I don't recommend people buy themselves or make at home or buy from a friend, because there are some things about stability, whether it lasts on your skin, whether it lasts in the bottle, that are really important. And it's kind of a, one of those more complicated ingredients. So yeah, it really depends. But yeah, I was going to, as I mentioned, soaps and body oils or massage oils and things can be very simple in their ingredient formulation and the kind of thing that doesn't need to have a lot of complex chemistry behind it. And so, yeah, kind of have twofold feeling about that, that trend. And it would be helpful to make sure that those companies are also thinking about avoiding other harmful ingredients, even if they're natural, and avoiding or packaging their product in a way that keeps it from spoiling or breaking down. Although, you know, if your product breaks down, that's something you realize, you throw it away, you know, it develops a weird color or odor, and that's something you might not buy again. So those are the kind of things where a formulator would get that feedback from their customers, or you would notice right away if something was wrong. Whereas some of these ingredients that impact the hormone system or over time to cause you to develop allergies are more subtle, harder to trace back, and the type of information a manufacturer may not have, even if they're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, it's, you know, those of us that work with impacted communities, it's even hard for us to, first of all, we don't recommend any alternative to skin lighting because that's very toxic, and we don't, we don't accept any colorism behaviors, and we don't want communities to even change in their skin color. So that's the issue with that. But in terms of personal care products and general cosmetics, we can't even give them, as an alternative using organics because we're not even sure what's in there. So that's
another
limitation.
Agreed. It's very complicated or hard to give someone a quick one thing to do. And that's, again, why we come back at Sierra Club to changing the laws, changing the ways that products are made and marketed so that these aren't decisions that have to fall on the individual person. Because it's a very, it's hard to figure out one screening or one thing to look for or avoid that will be completely safe.
Yeah, thank you, Sonia. And Sonia, you do such a amazing work because your work also not only addressing these toxic chemicals and the environmental, but also you focus the intersection of gender, which some of these cosmetics are, gender. A lot of times it's like gender related. So could you talk about more of that in terms of gender equity as it relates to cosmetic use and how these chemicals are impacting women more so?
Yeah, thank you. We find or have really focused on cosmetic safety as a gender issue. There's so many pressures on women to look a certain way or to use specific products. And they're also shopping and purchasing things generally for the entire family. There are ingredients that, and not just in cosmetics, but in the food we eat, in household products, cleaning products that impact the reproductive system and that have an intense effect on pregnancy, the ability to get pregnant or early term birth. And so that's an area we feel like there hasn't been enough research. It's very critical and important for women's health. We also find that when we look at cosmetic ingredients sold in the United States, particularly, the most harmful products on the market are marketed to Black and Brown women to uphold really racist and damaging beauty norms. And I'm thinking of skin lightening, but also hair straightening products that are very harsh and can have long-term damage to the scalp and to hair, as well as to salon workers when they're based in formaldehyde, which causes cancer and severe respiratory effects. And also talc-based powders that were marketed really heavily to Black women. Mm-hmm. And internationally, they have asbestos in them, and so they can cause lung cancer. And then when women use them for feminine hygiene, they can cause ovarian cancer. And there are incredible number of cases against Johnson & Johnson baby powder and marketing to Black women in the US that caused Johnson & Johnson to say they'd stop selling these body powders in the US, they can't make them safe enough. And the asbestos is found in talc, which is a powder. But they'll continue to sell this powder all over the rest of the world.
I'm in Nairobi now, and it's everywhere, actually. So the sad thing is that the skin lighting product, this and these bottles that have talc are everywhere, you know, marketed to, you know, like communities in Africa. And these are the most toxic. These have like the most toxic ingredients.
Agreed. And so I think that, you know, not only do we look at gender in terms of who's being pressured to buy and use these products and making these decisions, but also race. And, you know, time and again, like I said, the most harmful or damaging products have this root in racism and colorism. And so I think that's something that's really critical to bring into the conversation, both to make baseline products safer for everyone, but to name the fact that these most harsh and damaging products aren't needed and are, you know, upheld for beauty standards that we might need to question and have a more, you know, community rooted conversation about and move away from. You know, that's one thing for me to talk about as a white identifying white woman in the United States, but I think it's an important way that organizations like mine show up and support calls for change from the communities that we are in partnership with. And really name the damaging practices behind the beauty industry as it impacts Black and Brown women globally.
Yeah, thank you, Sonia, the work that you do. That's such an amazing work, and I really appreciate you doing that work. So in terms of regulatory change for the cosmetic ingredients, whether it's a federal or state legislations, what are some of the legislations that are out there that you are working on now, federal, and I think you were involved some of them in California. So could you talk about that as well?
Yeah, there's a network of organizations that have really taken on this question of cosmetic safety, ingredient safety, secrecy, a lot of ingredients that don't have to be listed on the label, and bumping up the penalties for products that aren't complying with these few laws that we have. Actually, a lot of that work is being done by the other outside groups nationally, and California did pass a bill restricting new ingredients that hadn't been regulated in cosmetics last year due to a lot of work of grassroots groups in California. So the opportunity is to both add more ingredients to the list that aren't allowed, focusing on those that have already been documented to cause problems, to give the government more power to recall harmful products or suspicious products if they start to hear that there are a lot of people having adverse reactions. There's educational work around the skin lightening that I know you've been supporting, that Sierra Club would step in and support when it's at, you know, when it's reaching its fruition. There are bills that would regulate the term natural and organic, or ban ingredients like formaldehyde and asbestos that are really well documented, well known to be causing cancer and other damages to the human body. Those are the you know, more oversight over imports to make sure that they're complying with US law. And then outside of the legal framework, we have had these corporate accountability campaigns to make sure that large retailer online stores like Amazon and eBay and Alibaba are complying with the law, and that they're not a place where these highly toxic products are dumped without any kind of responsibility. So in Europe, there's an action that would require some steps for them to keep a better tab on their inventory and make sure they're not selling illegal products and allow people who see those for sale to report them. And we'd like Amazon and eBay and Alibaba to comply with those kind of principles globally.
Yeah, but also them, like the Amazon and eBay to comply with, it needs government systems that are addressing this. And we don't have these strong government systems that are regulating these issues. And so do you think that, and I know cosmetic legislation comes back at the federal level almost every session, every year. Do you think that it has a chance this year?
Yeah, you're right. It has been a multi-year effort. I do think that it does have a chance to succeed this year. We have both Democrats controlling the House and the Senate, there's been a lot of groundwork laid by community-based organizations and advocacy groups over decades talking about the problems in ingredient safety. We have more women in Congress who I think have been raising these issues or champions of these issues. So I do think, in some cases, even the industry is stepping forward and saying, okay, we're looking bad as these harmful ingredients are found in US products. Europe is far ahead of the US in terms of assessing and putting controls on some of those natural fragrances that can cause allergies, as well as banning toxic ingredients in hair dyes and problematic preservatives like formaldehyde or parabens. And so I think that, seeing these case reports, they're natural baby wipes, but they contain a potent allergen and these babies have incredible skin problems or, problems like that, that have been high profile enough that even the industry is saying, okay, it might be better for us if the government has some more power and can standardize or make things a little bit better across the board.
Yeah, true. And I agree with you. This year is different and I'm so grateful myself too, that we have Congresswomen who really care about these issues, like Congresswoman Betty McCollum, who has been really great advocate in addressing the skin lightening issue, and also Ilhan Omar. So I think that helps a lot to have these amazing women leaders in Congress. So Sonia, we are towards the end of the program. And so do you have last words to share, or will you like to add anything that I didn't ask you around this issue, cosmetic and ingredients that are toxic?
It's such a pleasure to talk to you. It's always wonderful to work with you, Amira. I think that this work is very critical, but needs to be done from multiple communities and multiple perspectives. Mm-hmm. There's a challenge or a danger if only one group or one perspective is represented at the table of really making mistakes or getting something wrong and missing important things. So I'm grateful for the learning you've brought to me about skin lightening and about products that are impacting the Somali American community as well as other immigrant communities. And I think that we are much stronger and able to get the solutions that are equitable and effective and democratic and impact everybody or address those most impacted when we have a broad coalition and a broad conversation and lots of different perspectives at the table. So I welcome this partnership. I'm eager to continue it and to grow this conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only way that we can ensure that the work we do is actually effective and targeted in the appropriate way. So it's always a pleasure to work with you. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Sonia. And likewise, it has been always great working with you. And I always look forward to working with you. You have been really great supportive to the work that we do. So thank you so much. And thank you so much for your time today discussing these issues that are impacting many communities in the United States and globally. So thank you.
All right. Be well, Amira.
Thank you.